Recording has started.
Hi everyone, my name is Jeff Cohen. I'm with APS. I'd like to welcome everyone to our second conference call. We have some distinguished guests with us today. That would be John Gayston, who will be leading the call primarily, Ali Alberigo, and Melody Schumann. And we'd like to certainly welcome them as well as everyone who is participating. We'd like to certainly look forward to the impact that these calls will make in the future on each and every one of your businesses, and hopefully those of you that come to these regularly will actually give us some advice on how we're doing with these calls and what we can do to certainly impact your businesses better and make these calls even more fruitful. So with that, I'd like to pass the torch to John. And we can go over, start with our agenda today. These calls will last about an hour, unless there's an extensive question and answer, but we'd like to keep them to about an hour. And John, take it away.
Okay, thank you. What I want to talk about on this specific call was talking about having a curriculum-driven school. And there's a lot of schools that are doing different things. Back in around 99 or 2000, I personally had a pretty successful school, but I had a couple areas that were weak. One of it was the total contract value, and then I was finding that I was having a fairly decent high dropout rate around my fourth or fifth belt level. And at that time, it's when I come across this concept through some other people of setting up this curriculum-driven program. So a lot of people are using, you know, the buzzword in the industry is naturally to say that we are a black belt school. With the curriculum-driven concept, we actually became that. So with the curriculum was setting up that we would have a basic training course, a black belt training course, a master's training course, and then a leadership training course. There's a couple different the eight areas that I've seen that are with these programs by designing it in a curriculum-driven programs was one was seeing that your students were seeing quicker results for themselves. So they were achieving something and seeing the results from it. The programs being set up this way, too, were giving the students clear and compelling goals that they could attain and reach. It kept the curriculum exciting and motivating, and it helped disguise the repetition of it. Disguising the repetition and keeping your students challenged of that. One, by setting up a basic program, the biggest downfall, I think, with a lot of curriculum that we're teaching in the schools and different things is that new students can become overwhelmed by too much information or techniques or drills that could be frustrating or intimidating. Naturally, in that area, we want to keep the self-esteem of the child very high. And then the downside of it is by showing too much in the beginning on this kind of this reverse pyramid concept is that we start to dwindle down in the curriculum towards the middle, which was the problem that we were having, towards the middle of the curriculum, and then we were getting students that were upper belts kind of bored with that and moved on. So this is where this whole concept kind of helped fix those definite problems with me. I think let's go ahead, and if you've got a pen or something too, we can make some notes on these. Let's talk about, and I got two different ways that we do this. I'm going to talk about the kids level first. So when we set up a basic training course, that's level one, black belt training course, level two, master's training course, level three, and then like I said, the fourth one is the leadership. I'm going to touch on the first three, and then I think Melanie's going to help out a little bit with some leadership concepts on the fourth when she gets the opportunity to come on with her segment. The basic training course. At the basic training courses, we explain to our parents, we want to start everybody off in a basic concept. I think the two biggest objections that school owners face when they're enrolling a student are either going to be the price of the program or the duration of the commitment. So by doing a six-month basic program, what we try to do was alleviate the two major objections that are going to happen. The basic program, we want to focus pretty much just on fitness. Naturally, children are going to be getting in shape. We're going to work on basic fundamental skills, basic kicking, basic strikes, basic blocks, basic self-defense. When I talk about basic self-defense in this concept is maybe just staying not so much with one-step type sparring activity, but maybe just dealing with how to get out of certain holds. Maybe, for example, I use six basic holds that we use over the six-month period of time. We don't get into any one-steps until they would move up to the next level. And then we use to reinforce the value of our program, We're going to be talking in the basic program. We include the life skill program, which we use a power word and a striping system that ties into their belt ranking. And then we have what we call the common sense before self-defense safety course. So that's how much we pretty much base. The basic program is staying very fundamental, nothing there as far as the extra stuff. What we want to do is build up their self-esteem, their confidence with that material, the fundamentals, that they can do this, that they can achieve quicker results with it and see that they're good at this. And then we want to naturally move into the black belt training course. The black belt training course is going to be encompassing all the stuff we just talked about in the basic, but this is where we're going to get more advanced on the curriculum, where it becomes a curriculum driven. There's no reason, the theory that I took was there's really no reason for a child to have to learn katas. The Kempo self, I teach Kempo, for example. There's really no reason for them to learn the 9-block star drill or the 18 hands combinations or different things unless they're really going to make that commitment and go for black belt. So this is where we get into the curriculum training. So we're going to start moving them towards that curriculum so that one day is actually going to get them to be awarded that black belt and the black belt graduation. So this is where we could get more into taking the basic strikes, kicks, and blocks. Maybe we become more advanced with that. This is where we can move into spinning techniques, jumping techniques, different advanced kicking combinations. We can move off the self-defense from grabs. Now we can actually start going into the one-step sparring from various attacks, punches, kicks, and different things. We introduce them to sparring at this level. We introduce them to our form systems that they have to start that are required for the black belt in our system. And then we also introduce them to board breaking at that point where they can get into that. So that is where the curriculum concept comes into mind. Now we have one more step that I'm going to talk about today, and that's moving into a master's training course for the children. The master's training course is pretty much encompassing of what we just talked about in the black belt training course. That's also going to include, now what we do is we move into our school, we go into a traditional martial art concept that we're going to talk about art, the philosophy behind the different arts, and that's when they're going to start moving into weapons. We use 9 to 12 different weapons that they'll learn being a member of that course and how that ties back into the black belt also. So it's a little bit of a step up from the black belt training course from what they were doing before. So with these three levels, and I'll give you an idea on the scheduling of these, the three levels that we wanted to do with the basic training course meets 5 times a week. Black belt training course meets 3 times a week in addition to the 5. We still have our students come in to the basic program. Now, that's suitable, and what I've discovered, that's pretty suitable for a school that's maybe dealing with 200 to 250 students. When you get above that, if you're dealing with 300, 400, or even more of that, you're probably going to want to increase your black belt training course to at least 5 nights a week and keep that separate where they're not doing the basic, that they have maybe extend the duration of the classes from a 30 to a 45-minute class, and then you're also going to probably want to include that 5 days a week opposed to just being 3 times. But if you're a school under 200, you could probably get by with doing the basic training courses up to 5 times a week, your black belt training courses up to about 3 times, and then we would add in the master's course 1 time a week. And that's where they're actually going to be learning the weapons and different things like that. Now that's what we do. The adult program's not too, I would suggest not being too much different than that. The adult, the biggest concept I think with adults is we use in our basic program is to maybe not introduce them to the martial arts quite yet. So with the adult market, we take the position that mostly adults are going to be looking for fitness and they're looking for self-defense. So this is where they can come in just regular workout clothes, and we want to teach basic kickboxing drills or pad drills, different things like that, so they're getting the fitness aspect and they're learning the proper way of punching and kicking and some self-defense applications to that. We have another tier off of that basic program. It's called the Basic Program Plus for the adults, and that's where we move into a sparring or what we call a fight class where they can actually start learning how to box and applying some of those principles. So there's another tier off the basic when we do our adult curriculum. Adult curriculum black belt training course, that's where we actually start moving into same kind of concept that we talked about with the children's program, but now we're actually going to start moving them in towards the katas and the different things that they would be doing also in to earn their black belt and move up with that stuff. Masters Club, a little bit different for the adults. We still do some weapons training with them, but we'll move into different things where they're learning our niece, they're learning the style, not just a 12-week segment on a weapon, or learning how to do a kata with it. And then we'll also talk about some jiu-jitsu ground and some different things like that. So these are just some general ideas on how we take our curriculum, and take the curriculum concept and apply our style and system to it. Everybody has their own different, and I tried to make that very, very generic as I was talking there on those concepts and giving you ideas of what we do. Depending if you're a Taekwondo school, if Shotokan, ninjutsu, or whatever your style is, you're going to have specific things on how you'll need to break that up just a little bit different. Like I said, the big concept with this is retention. The two areas that brought me to this concept was the fact that I wasn't getting contract value. So I want to talk about that just a little bit. Contract value, let's say if a school enrolls 200 students, the traditional school out there is enrolling 200 students, let's say on a 6 or 12 month course, and then a lot of them don't move to any upgrades or anything. They wait for the contract to expire, then they want to sit down and renew the student. If you're doing that, most schools are setting themselves up for failure. I try to follow, and if some of you do this, this is a retention thing that kind of comes over to my upgrade process, and that's called the 2-4-6, but I call it 2-4-6-6, meaning that I am not looking for a student to be a specific belt or have a specific level of expertise in order for me to move them into the black belt training course. What I'm looking for is the student that is excited, they're motivated, they're ready to go and do that. The very first month in a school, traditionally, students are very excited. It's new to them, it's fresh to them, they're very excited about doing it. So that's a prime time. So I've been known to sit down on the second week conference with them, and I will start the upgrade process at that point. I've also done it on the fourth week. If I don't get them on the second week, we do a fourth week conference, and we do a sixth week. And that's where, and then I wait again till another sixth week. And the reason I use this second sixth week cycle in there is that the next time that a student's going to reach peak excitement and motivation is going to be usually in their 3 to 4 months, depending on how your system's set up. We do 12-week cycles here on testing. So again, when they hit to that point, they're back in getting promoted. That excitement level or motivation level, that student has peaked once again. Again, just a prime time to work moving up into another level. And if you have 200 students, I'm sorry, the phone cut there for a second. If you have 200 students, I'm going to throw this concept out at you just on the business side of it. If you have 200 students, they enroll. You're getting that student to sign a contract one time. You're getting them sign up for 6 month or 12 month. If you have the tier system in there where they're going to a black belt or master's course training, now you're getting those same 200 students to sign up anywhere from 2 to 3 times. So in essence, those same students can give you equivalent to 400 to 500 on actual contracts, if you're following where I'm going with that. So if you have 200 students, and let's say 50 of them are on a 6 month, on a 6 month or a 12 month program, and then ideally what you want to try to do is target 60% of that, 60 to 80% of those, moving them up to the next levels, the black belt training course or the master's training course. So if we take, let's go back to the basic level, if we just take 200 students and put them on a 6 or 12 month program, and let's just say there's a $700 balance on that, you're looking at having in contract value approximately $140,000. Take those same 200. Let's say that we don't get 100% into the upgrade mode. So let's keep 50 of them on the basic program. Naturally, we want to be moving them up. But let's say we get 150, which should be a conservative figure, onto your black belt training course and your master's training course. That same 200 students with that, you could conceivably be into, depending on your pricing, but off of, if we go with that $140,000, you're looking at anywhere from $350,000 to $400,000 in contract value. Now, how am I coming up with those numbers? When you're doing the basic program, we do it as a six-month program. The black belt training course, we do that as a 24-month program. And then I got two options, different ways that we've done this, and some different schools that I'm consulting do this two different ways. They do your master's training course either another 24 months, or they make that a 36-month program. So now I'm going to shoot some generic. Let's just say, let's go for sake of conversation, just that your 6-month program is a $100 membership monthly. You're going to make your black belt training course $125 per month. But instead of being 6 months, now the commitment is that we're going to go for the black belt goal. And we always tell the parents that traditionally in our school, a black belt is anywhere from 4 to 5 years. So it's ridiculous for us to ask you to commit to that length of time. However, we do like you commit to at least half of that. So at halfway mark in 24 months, we can sit down and reevaluate where your child's goals are in direction, and to make sure that black belt makes sense for your child to achieve. So we want to go. The big jump there is only $25 per month, but the commitment that you're looking for, a 24-month program. The next thing on the master's is to go maybe, let's say, $150 a month, and also a 24-month program. So that's just another $25 more than what you were on your black belt. Now the other concept that some people are moving into with their master's training course is making it the exact same price of your black belt training course. However, not a 24-month, but you're looking at a 36-month program. And from what we're seeing with the people that we're coaching and stuff like that, that's working on both sides. So that's something that you can lead up to yourself. And in the fourth level that you can start moving on after you get up to that level is going to be the leadership program, and where you can actually also make that a 36-month course, and then charging the extra for teaching the leadership classes and different things like that. Okay, so then we've got our basic, black belt, masters. Retention is going to be higher because now what we're doing is making a tier level step up, where a student can gain, they're going to step up to the levels of something new and exciting each and every time to get some new information. We know from a business standpoint that we can build up our contract value. Contract value from a business perspective is extremely important. You got a lot more strength with your bank and with your financial security if you have $400,000 in contract value opposed to $150,000 in contract value. Okay. Let me ask you this. Is there any questions at this point on the upgrade levels or having a curriculum-driven school?
I have a question, sir.
Yes.
Now, you said the masters, they can actually train 5 days a week on the masters.
Yeah, you can divide that up however. I do on the master's trail, they're still coming to the basic program 5 days a week. Then there's three times a week, and what I've done on this is usually do my black belt training right after. So let's say, for example, I have a 5 o'clock basic course on Monday and Wednesday, and I alternate them. Then I have 5:30 on Tuesday, Thursday. So I would want to set up my black belt training course where it's immediately after that. And the reason of that, too, is that you're constantly upselling your upgrade program right to your students because they're seeing them in a different uniform top. And they're getting to watch them start warming up where they're doing jumps off the mini trampoline, spinning kicks, some exciting stuff that's a lot cooler than just standing in a straddle stance throwing some basic punches. So we have it there where we set it up where they only do that three times a week. Now, depending on your number of students or how you're wanting to do that, you can make that up to five times a week. Master's training, I just throw in an additional one night off of the black belt training course, and that one night is completely focused on a weapon. And we'll do a new weapon and the history and the philosophy that goes with that weapon one time a week, and we'll do that for a 12-week cycle.
Now, is a person training 5 days a week, or am I the same for one person? Like if I signed up for the master's club, am I training 5 days a week?
It's conceivable that you are doing that. You can, ideally, we want to try to get, you want a student in your studio 2 to 3 times a week, naturally for retention purposes. Now, with doing that, if they're doing that, they could stay for the basic training. Now, I set all my classes up on 30-minute increments for the kids. So let's say I have a basic class Monday night, basic 30-minute class at 5 o'clock. 5:30 is when we'd have the black belt training course. That's another 30 minutes. So they would actually stay for an hour there. So if you could set that up where they're coming to those 2 to 3 times a week where they're getting their hour in opposed to just another basic where they're only getting 30 minutes in. And then naturally if they're in the master's training course, you'd want them there that extra time. So that's where you could see 2 to 3 times, even 4 times a week.
So you do 30 minutes instead of, that won't burn them out then.
Correct.
If you're doing 30 minutes, you know, you're doing an hour 5 days a week, that
right.
possibly burn them out.
Sure. And even on this concept, if they're in the black belt training course, they're still going to be doing an hour, but they're doing 30 minutes basic. Then they're kicking in to another where they're going to be doing a completely different curriculum change on the last 30 minutes. So.
I got you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You break that up by rank, ages?
Can you speak up a little bit?
Do you break that up by ranks, ages?
I break it up by ranks. By ages, not necessarily by ranks.
You'll have white to black belts in one class.
Exactly. Now, there's another level that you could do with this, and I've done this with my former school that I still consult, but I had sold. They have a very heavy, that school's been open 8, 9, 10 years, so they've got a heavier demographic setting of having upper belts. So what we've done with this is set up where we have a black belt training course phase 1, black belt training course phase 2, and a phase 3. So we can easily, in that school, that particular school has 2 rooms, so it's very easy to have basic black belt training course 1 going on in one floor, black belt training course 2 and 3 going on in the other. But the ideal of having the curriculum driven is that it kind of fits into a block belt system too. So in the basic program, that we set up is only as a 6-month course. By 6 months, we want that student to make a decision that this is a black belt school, and if our goal is to get you to black belt, and at some point you need to step up to being into the advanced curriculum to get to that goal. And then you could be looking at, let's say you have your first 4 belts or your first 5 belts or however you set that, where it is conceivable that those first 5 belts could be set up in the same course. If you have that situation in your school, then that's something that we could address and figure out how we can break that up, that black belt training courses, maybe into phases for you, opposed to just having one course for that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, sort of. I'll probably have to call in and maybe talk to you offline.
Okay, that'd be fine.
Take up too much time.
Okay, any other questions?
John, quick question for you.
Sure.
This is Floyd Kish.
Floyd.
You broke down the basic, black belt, and master to a $100, $125, and $150 per month thing.
Right.
Those aren't stacked. We're not looking at like, okay, they're in basic, they're paying $100, and then if they join black belt, we add another $125, so they're essentially paying $225, right?
Not under the concept that I'm talking about.
Okay, you're just
talking about people that do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in your concept, they're just renewing. They're
exactly.
upgrading their program. Now they're instead of paying $100 a month, they're paying $125.
They're going to a 24, 36 month, and then there's an upgrade in that. Now the other thing that I didn't touch on is naturally, you talked about the black belt training system,
right?
Or curriculum, is that now that we're getting into that, we've introduced sparring and different things like that. So now we have an equipment package. Mm-hmm. So there's also another down payment for each one of those.
Okay.
So we might charge $199 down, and then you have 24 months at $125, and the $190 down includes an equipment sparring package or something like that. And you want to price that where you're using that also. That can be, I guess, kind of a pro shop revenue increaser also.
Okay, great.
And John, if I may, this is Jeff.
Sure.
Let me add to that. When you're pricing out your contracts, a lot of people will do 100 or 200, 150, 100 and a quarter a month. There's nothing that says that you can't say this is what my 6-month program is, or is you're ready to upgrade our 24 month, and entice them, the customer, to pay it off quicker. Okay, you typically don't want to have someone make 6 payments for a 6-month program or 24 for a 24 month program. If you can get them to pay it off quicker, in half the time, even 75% of the time, when it's time to upgrade them, there's a lot less money that they have due, and you can always extend that time on to the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it front loads your revenue, you're getting more cash flow. I mean, for example, if you look at your studios and you say, you know, the average customer lasts, you know, this is an abysmal number, but let's say 8 months, and you're doing one-year programs, well, then you want to find a way to get the money in within 7 to 8 months. Hopefully, those people, if they've already paid, the retention will be higher. They're going to say, well, I've already paid you anyway. I might as well keep going. But when you're looking to upgrade, it's less money you have to roll into a new program potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just some little ideas on that as well. You know, if the customer can afford it or put a larger amount down to cover, you know, so many payments, the payment amount can be the same even, but you're getting a chunk of that up front.
Right.
Or escalated, if that makes sense to everyone.
Yeah. Very good. Is there any other questions?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
A couple of them, probably. If we've already got an established school, an established way of doing something, how do you best incorporate something that's going to be fairly dramatic?
Mm-hmm. We could probably get together individually and probably address that. The big thing is anytime that you're doing any type of change, and change is the one constant we have in this world, so you're always going to have to, as a school owner, you're going to have to make changes at some point in your school if you're going to take it to the next level. So we can address that. Anytime you do a change, you have to be able to convey, share the vision with your students and parents and let them understand the benefit and why they're going that direction. I would say the most common question that I get on this, and this may be the question, one of those other questions that you have in mind, is if my students are already getting all that material right now, how do I implement those phases? And that is to go, you can still get them if they're doing that, you grandfather them in, but you're still wanting to get a commitment on them. This is how we're doing it, and you're going to grandfather them in maybe at the same rate or maybe at a slight increase, but you ideally you want to try to still get that 24 or 36 month program out of them.
All right, that sounds great, John. If there's nothing else on this particular item, I suppose we should move to Allie and have him discuss the next component. John, if you'd like to have him do that.
Yeah, perfect. We in this, when we talked about this, one of the key things was the retention, and I think, Allie, you're going to speak directly on retention. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I love, first of all, I love all the ideas that you have, and I think that's incredible, and to me, I took like 3 pages of notes already on it, but I'm having with me it's a little bit difficult, and I don't know if there's anyone else out there, because I'm kind of stuck to a very traditional program where a lot of it is a set curriculum versus basic designing my own curriculum. In other words, like my teacher from Japan, he has a curriculum, and I try to follow that. Of course, I've altered it slightly, but certain things that I do are based on progressions that, you know, like our techniques will start off very basic, but most of our stuff that we do is self-defense orientated, so that, you know, I can't teach an advanced move before I teach a beginner move, and then they progress from beginner to, you know, more difficult. So I think that in those programs are awesome when people are doing them. They just got to be really careful at how they institute them. And I think that the way you have it set up is like the first level you said was basic training.
Yes, sir.
So that to me is a lot of people have to make sure that they realize that it has to be basic training. They can't confuse the two, or else people will get overwhelmed and confused, or, you know, demotivated. And that's what I think. My whole idea on as far as retention is making sure that the people are retaining and, you know, their information and seeing progressions in their training and moving from one level to the other, not just going from program to program, but really actually seeing where they are and seeing the progression in their training and feeling that they've accomplished things and so on. And that, to me, I think is really, really important.
Sure.
Also, the next thing, as far as retention in my school, I found it's the severity of the program. Like, for instance, I used to have a 7-year black belt training course. And it was ridiculous. I wasn't getting many black belts at all. Then I went into my program and I shortened it down, simplified the curriculum slightly, and then I went to a 5-year black belt training cycle, and now we have huge amounts of people that are making it through the program. The only thing that I find now, too, is now, though, as we get the black belt, people are trying to, they think that that's the goal. They've attained their goal, and then some people are dropping out. So now I'm looking at really making sure what's going on in the level of black belt. Even though that we have an exciting curriculum, we do have a black belt curriculum, it's not like they're just learning one new kata or movement. but I'm making sure that I'm trying to find out where certain people are getting demotivated at the black belt level. So that's important as well. And I think some of the things that you had talked about, your 2-4-6-week calls and the 12-week calls, those things are just imperative to retention, whether even if you're not even trying to upgrade them. I think that just by you meeting with the people and talking to them and picking their brain and finding out where their sticking points are, the problems that they're having, those are really, really essential. So if studio owners are not doing 2-4-6-week calls or follow-up calls or conference calls, that they're going to lose people and not even realize that they lost them until it's too late. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And another thing that I'm doing as far as retention goes, there's so many little simple things that a studio owner can do as far as retention goes. And, I mean, one little simple thing that I instituted is the attendance, which is actually a perfect attendance award that we're doing in our studio. And we went from our first month of doing it of having maybe in my 480 students, I had maybe about 25 people making perfect attendance. By the second month, we were double that. And by the third month, we almost tripled that. So now we went from a few 30 people, now we're up to like 140 people every month are doing perfect attendance. And the perfect attendance award was just a simple little thing, and we added a trophy with a certificate. And it's amazing, even with adults, how simple a little thing like that and how great it works. So that was another thing that we instituted. I mean, as far as other things, as far as retention goes too, it's really all about monitoring a student's progress in class. I've found that any time I've trained, if my instructor wasn't paying the attention to me or I wasn't getting the response I was looking for, I would get demotivated quickly. So that's important as well. It's in-class response to the students, making sure you're monitoring their success, giving them credit for what they've done, and continually following up on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are some of the areas that I consider being real important. Does anyone have any questions on that up to this point, or no?
I have a question I'd like to ask Ollie. As far as creating the wow factor with your students, aside from teaching them quality martial arts, having a real good floor presence, what other things are you doing that would increase the quality of lessons in your school as opposed to a school down the street from you that would set you apart?
Well, you're right. The most important thing, I mean, the wow factor, right, like getting the students excited. I found that, and this is no joke, that literally I could jump through a hoop of fire every day. It could just get bigger and bigger, and eventually they're just going to get bored.
Mm-hmm.
With the dynamics in the classroom are really, really important. I found, though, that the variety, you know, of course, we disguise repetition, whatever the drills may be, but I think that it's important in this world that we live in right now that everybody sees a progression. But at the same time, many schools, this is a huge problem in martial arts today, is that people are rewarding belts and they're rewarding stripes and rewarding the students. They're rewarding these stripes and belts and they're rewarding the students when they're not really progressing physically. So I think the most important thing to having them stay excited is to have them learn how to monitor their own progress and set up a standard that they look for in themselves. Now, this is not easy because, you know, parents sometimes want them to get their belt whether they deserve it or not. The kids sometimes don't care. They just want their belt because they want to see them with a different color or they want to progress on. So I think it's really this key to the class is to really get the students to want to be able to perform the techniques at the quality that you're looking for. I mean, of course, exciting classes are important. You know, new drills are important. Ways of how the charisma of how the teachers teach are really important. But that stuff wears pretty thin unless you have all the other things in place to keep the students on track and making them monitor their own progress to be able to follow up and you know, really demand that quality from themselves as well. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. But could you elaborate a little bit more on how they monitor their own progress?
Well, in my school, we have a thing called Q level, and in the Japanese martial arts, there's a tradition, you know, the striping levels that are in between each belt.
Okay.
In my school, what we do is we progress from, you know, let's just say from white to yellow belt, we have one stripe, which is a middle point in the belt. They have a specific curriculum that they follow, and we give them their complete sheet of what they need to do from A to B, from white to yellow, and then at that point there, they know exactly what's required of them for before the stripe, and they know what's required of them after the stripe. We have a third week of the month that we stripe everybody, and then at the end of the month we test everybody. So the students themselves are not able to come up in front of us unless they know the material. In other words, they're going to come up and request, Sifu, can you check my level? And if they're not ready, they know that, because they're going to look embarrassed in front of the class. They're going to fail. So I'd rather them come to me and say, I need some work on this, this, and this, and we'll help them. But I want them to know what they need to be responsible for what they actually know. So they have to step up. You see, the biggest problem is I've seen these studios, and I don't know how it works. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I don't know how a studio could promote every 3 months without fail. Everyone goes up in rank, and people move forward without really actually deserving it. So that's where in our studio they'll constantly come up to us. And there are kids that are bold enough to come up and fail in front of the whole class, but the majority of them are ready. They prepare themselves. They get prepared by asking other students or a private lesson or whatever, so that when they do come up for their testing, they're ready to go. And at this time I found, too, that if they do fail, they fail humbly, because then they know it was their own fault. So that's really what I have found. We've done this. This has been something that we've worked on for the last 3 years, and it's working tremendously. So our black belt group of people we have just this spring, we have 25 people testing for black belt in one class. So it should be, and then every year we should be promoting 40 to 50 black belts every year for the next few years. Does that help at all?
Oh, yes.
Any other questions on anything like that, or anybody else out there? Okay. The last and final thing that I could add to retention would be, I guess the most important thing, of course, would be conferences with parents. I think that no matter what, the majority of martial arts studios deal with children. And we live in this fast food society where people are constantly saying, well, if Joey doesn't want to do it anymore, I'm not going to force him. So I think the most important thing that I instituted, which was monumental in changing our dropout rate, was instituting parent and student classes. Not actually having the parents training in the martial arts, but doing specific seminars, teaching the parents on how to coach their kids and how to work with them at home and what to look for. Even though sometimes parents are watching the classes, they don't really know what to say, how to hold a pad, what to do. So we instituted these parent programs where they actually learn how to coach their children, and I found that then the dad or mom is saying, hey, let's do the pad together at home. And you know, when the kid says, I want to quit, the parent is able to fully, without, you know, lying to the child, say, I can't believe you would want to quit when you could do a roundhouse like that. Or, you know, they're literally becoming a part of your team, almost like those crazy dads that coach Little League Baseball thinking that they're coaching the New York Mets or the New York Yankees. They're now behind the martial arts, and I'm trying to get the parents away from the thought that we're just another hobby, that we're just another T-ball, soccer, or baseball, because we're not. We're just so much more than that. And I want the parents to realize that. And as well, I'm also coaching the parents on all the things that we do mentally in the school, all our focus drills, all the positive affirmations that we say. And I'm teaching a lot of the parents in these mini seminars on how they could utilize that at home, how they could utilize that to get their kids to clean their room and do their homework. So now they definitely don't want their kids to drop out. I used to be the kind of guy going, wow, parents are just not... The parents that bring my kids to the dojo, some of them are not involved. They don't really care. It's like a glorified babysitting center. But now I'm finding a lot of these parents are now becoming part of the team. They're actually coaching their kids and helping us help them stay in the program versus us trying to convince them and the parents why we're so great. Any questions on that at all? Or?
No, I think that's an awesome idea. Plus, just from what you were saying with that, I got from that, by having those seminars and using the parents to help the children training at home.
Absolutely.
That's a great opportunity when you're doing that to also use that to sell some more training gear and sell some more equipment. So now they're going to buy equipment to use at home also.
Yeah, well, we did a kick pad seminar recently where we actually have level tiers 1, 2, and 3 on kick pad seminars.
Uh-huh.
Where the first one is we sold a single hand mitt kick pad, you know, the square ones from Century. And we did a whole entire kick pad seminar where we taught the parents 12 drills and how to drill their kids. Now we have a level 2 where they get it, they pay $24.99 for that. And then the second one, level 2, they get a second pad, but the level 2, they actually learn how to use 2 pads. Then the third one, we're teaching the parents how to work with the kids on wave masters and the little kid kicks. And now they're, you know, this is where we package them into the actual seminar, and we're selling the gear. We're getting the parents to become coaches, and at the same time, the kids have the product at home, and you know, there's a whole synergy between the home life and the, you know, and what they're doing in the martial arts school.
Fabulous idea.
Yeah, and one last thing I instituted just recently on for retention is, every single time, of course, most people have letters of intent. I know that's popular now, and we do that when a kid's going to be promoted or being even striped before they get their stripe, which is just something that's insignificant in class. We make sure that they sign a questionnaire and a parental permission and teacher permission sheet, which is the letter of intent. But on the questionnaire, I ask questions like, have you read a martial art book with your child? Have you watched a martial art movie with your child? Have you taken your child to see a martial art tournament or anything like that? How much have you worked with your child at home? So if these parents are answering no, 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 no to this question, it's easy for me to turn to them and say, you know your child's going to want to quit eventually. And then what are you going to say to them? How are you going to keep them in the program? So now we're getting parents now to request books that they could read with their kids, movies like Chuck Norris' Top Dog and, you know, Ernie Ray's Horse Dance and all these things that are really beneficial for the parents to sit with the kids and actually teach and learn. And the parents are learning the lessons about the martial arts, even though that they're not able to do the class. Or some of them are actually even getting interested in through this stuff. I have a bunch of people who joined from our KickPad seminar. Parents have signed up. So that's one other thing that we did was our student questionnaire and parental questionnaire. So I thought it was excellent as well. It's working great for us. So that's
fantastic.
Really it. I could. Jeff knows I could talk forever, so I'm not going to hold anyone else up. So any last questions or no? Okay.
So thank you very much, Allie. Our last and certainly not least guest today is Melody, sitting patiently in the wings. And she we'll have to wake her up. And then, no, I'm just kidding, of course. And she'd like to tell everyone a little bit about leadership teams. I am honored to let everyone know on this call that we are working on a leadership, age-specific leadership program with Melody. Specifically, that will be available to really the martial arts community, and certainly our clients, combined clients, will get some nice benefits, some little savings there. But it's going to be an unbelievable package, and we look forward to that. And Melody, if you can tell everyone a little about what we're doing and leadership teams.
The leadership team, the reason why I chose to work with APS Billing on a leadership team is because it's very lucrative and it's very simple to implement. Once you're organized and once you have your resources to run your leadership team. The three main benefits of my leadership team at my school is, of course, number one, it generates a lot of revenue. My leadership team solely alone does over $7,500 cash per month. The second benefit, of course, is enhancing the lifestyle of the student, whether it's a, excuse me, I have a little cold, whether it's a child or an adult. And, of course, the third benefit to the leadership team, sorry, is that it's the heartbeat of your actual school. Really quickly, let me review how my leadership team works in my school. The first step to being on my leadership team, of course, is you have to be on my master club or my master club elite. And my master club program is very different than what John does, but of course there's many different ways that you can operate it. But once you're on the master club program, then you have to get an instructor to sponsor you. You have to fill out an application, which of course goes over some of the basic questions like, do you have good transportation? Are you studying? Are you making sure that you're taking care of all your responsibilities at home? And once they do the application, then they go through a probationary period, which is 30 days, where they're actually assisting and they're following their duties in the classroom. And if they do good, then they actually become a member of the leadership team. Once they're part of the leadership team, we have three levels of leader. Level one is they act as a greeter or a buffer during their assisting hours. And what the greeters do, the greeter number one, really all the greeter does is open the door for any of the students who come into the school, says hello, helps break that ice once they walk into the facility. Greeter number two sits with the students who are waiting to take class just to keep them under control, help them stretch out, and also they're taking care of the waiting area, making sure that there's no shoes or no sparring equipment anywhere in the area. And then, of course, we have our buffer leader, which is part of level one, who stands on the deck, they hold targets when they're asked, and they keep the training deck and the target area neat. And, of course, they have maximum amount of assisting hours, which is 6 hours per week, and they only wear the junior leadership patch. Level two leader acts as an assistant to the junior leader or head instructor in the class. Basically, what an assistant instructor does is they monitor the deck, and they help those students who need special assistance during class, like the students who are punching with their right hand when they're supposed to punch with their left hand, or who's showing a little bit weak technique and they need a little assistance on that. Also, the assistant instructor holds the targets and works with the junior leader or head instructor during the group activities. And the assistant, the tracker, because we have a tracker who takes care of our tracking parts during the class when they're asked. Now, they have a maximum of 8 hours per week, and they also wear the junior leadership patch and pants during their assisting hours. Then our level 3 leader acts as a tracker or our junior leader during their assisting hours. Now, what our tracker does is we have tracking cards that they actually turn in at the beginning of class. And the tracker is the one who basically separates them into groups depending on what skill stripes they need to earn for the day. And also the tracker is the one who's looking on the classroom floor to see what students have little weak spots, whether it's in the foot position of their sidekick, the knee position, maybe their retraction hand is a little weak. And they make a little mark on the card, and they're handing them out to the assistant instructors to pull them over to the side and work with them to improve their technique. The junior leader is the one who actually leads the class in the basic stretches, basic exercises, basic games, and basic activities. The junior leader also leads the group during group activities, and they can give out skill stripes to those students who qualify. The junior leader can assist in 10 hours per week, and they also wear the full junior leadership uniform. Now, once you complete the 3 levels of leaders, then you actually become a captain, which just basically is a status quo thing in our school, and all of our junior leadership tour captains, basically the heartbeat of our school. Now, going back to the benefits, again, of the junior leadership program and why I think it's such a fantastic program is because I only have 2 leadership classes per week. They're half-hour long, one for the juniors and one for the adults. Again, like I said, it's part of the standalone program, which is our Master Club program. And what's different about my Master's Club program is it's an annual fee. It's a one-time annual fee. And for access to the leadership team, it's only $500 per month or per year. I'm sorry. And then access to the elite team, which is demo team and SWAT team, it's $750 per year. Now, going to how this generates revenue, we do about 15 master clubs per month. They pay $500 cash. They get the entire year. That's $7,500 a month that we do just in the master club access. Also, the master club elite, it's $750, and we're doing about 10 of those a month. So if you do the math, we're talking about $14,000 to $15,000 in extra revenue per month, cash, and they can take the entire year. Not really a hard-pressure sell. You're not trying to get them on a long-term contract. Basically, if somebody says, look, Ms. Schumann, I want to teach at your school, or I want my child to teach at your school, I think it's a fantastic program, how much is it? I tell them it's a one-time annual fee of $500. Basically, every single parent or any single student who shows interest says, where do I sign? And I say, well, before you sign, you have to actually fill out the contract or fill out the application. Once they fill out the application, if they get approved, then they can go ahead and enroll. So, again, this is a fantastic way to generate an additional source of revenue. It's very, very simple to run once you have your organization set up and once you have the resources. And, of course, that's why I'm working with APS Billing to actually build a leadership team resource manual that you can use as your resources for your leadership team class. Going into why it enhances the lifestyle of my students, basically I used to just look at my leadership team as a team that I can use to help out on the floor. And that's all, that was basically my entire focus, that was why I was driven, and it was all about classroom etiquette, setting a good example, and helping me out on the floor because I have a lot of people on the floor. Now my perspective has changed. Basically what we're using the leadership team and the responsibilities that they have in the school to build their leadership skills outside of the classroom. So a lot of the things that I talk about in my leadership program don't necessarily pertain to being a leader in the class. And I think that is essentially why the leadership team is so effective in my school, because we're talking about building exterior characteristics. We're not necessarily exterior, but they're really, really focusing them on just setting a good example, following the rules, striving for excellence, not just in martial arts, but in everything you do. And we really are reshaping our leaders' lives. We have a fantastic leadership team for juniors. We also have a huge leadership team for adults. Now, these are non-staff members. A lot of the adults who are in my leadership team program are doing it just because they want to have access to resources to make them a better leader. This is going to help them in their career, whatever they're doing outside, whether they are in sales and marketing, or even if they're just working at an average job. Leadership skills definitely help increase your effectiveness.
Extended.
Sorry. So enhancing the lifestyle of the student is my priority and my goal. I put my heart and soul into my leadership team to make them the best people, best leaders they possibly can be. It's all geared towards leadership, not just in the classroom, but outside, that's very marketable. The results are very measurable, and they're proven, and that's, again, why we have such a huge response for people who want to be on the leadership team. Now, going to the third benefit for the leadership team, again, I said it was essentially the heartbeat of my school. If you're a non-martial arts person and you're walking into my school because you're interested in taking a martial arts classroom, from the minute you walk into the door until the minute you leave, you're having direct contact with the actual leadership team. We always have a greeter who opens up the door who gives you a hello. When you're looking at the facility and you see the children who are the students who are waiting on deck, there's a junior leader sitting there with them making sure that they're stretching, they're making sure that they're not making too much ruckus. We also have our buffer leader on the deck making sure the deck is never full of clutter and always there ready to jump up and help if they need to, but basically they're standing on deck. Then you have your assistant instructor who is pulling students off to the side, working with them on techniques. You have your tracker who is actually running the front part of the deck, doing the tracking cards. And you have your junior leader who is leading drills. So from a parent's perspective, and I'm just going to generate it towards children right now because that's the primary focus or the biggest effect on the leadership team is with children. So, but a parent walking into your class, into your dojo, and seeing all these children who are in this kind of position setting a great example and having so much enthusiasm and a positive attitude, the parent looks around and says, you obviously are doing well with children and you obviously can enhance my child's lifestyle and absolutely, I definitely want to be a part of your program. So that, I think, is very important and a very effective way to increase the chances of having a student enrolling in your school just by taking a look and peering over your entire dojo. Does anybody have any questions on that?
I have a question. This is Allie.
Hi, Allie.
Hey, Millie. How you doing?
Good.
This is great. I love your idea on this, and actually I have something similar to it, but my question for you is on the three tiers, the levels you have. The first one was a greeter and a buffer, and they
right.
pretty much sit, like they handle sitting area and helping out, you know, in the initial greeting of the doors and so on.
Right.
The second one you said was they monitor the deck, keep the classroom clean, pull cards, attendance, and so on.
Well, actually, you want me to review those three levels?
Yeah, could you do that for
me? Time? Sure. Level one leader, they have your greeters and your buffers.
Right.
Greeter one is the one who opens the door. Greeter two is the one who sits with the students. And your buffer is the one who stands on deck. They stand in military position, which is basically feet shoulder width apart, hands behind your back.
Right.
And, of course, they hold the targets, and they keep the deck clean. That's basically all they do.
Okay.
Then your level two leader is your assistant instructor. They're the ones who monitor the deck. They help the students who need special assistance. They also hold the targets and work with the junior leader and head instructor when they do the group activities. Then you have your level three leader, which is your tracker, who's at the front of the deck, who's taking care of the tracking cards and just monitoring the entire class and documenting all the students' progress and abilities. And you have your junior leader, who is actually running your basic exercises, basic games. Now, I say basic exercises and your basic games because our staff members really take care of your core drills, which are technical development drills or skill
right.
development drills or curriculum drills.
Okay.
Again, it makes it kind of easy because the students who just have the leadership patch, and it's just a bright leadership patch, you know those are the ones who are level one, and they're just the ones, I don't want to say they're do-boys, but those are the ones that you basically can have take care of minor responsibilities in the classroom.
Okay.
Your level two leader, you can tell they're level two because they just wear the junior leadership pants, which are the black pants.
Right.
And then you can tell who the level threes are by their full uniform. And it makes it really neat. You know, before, when I had my leadership program initially and we started it, we had 30 kids on our leadership team. Everybody wanted to help out. We didn't really assign them to schedules. So we had all these kids standing around. Nobody really knew what to do. And I felt like on a daily basis, or actually even on per class, I felt like I was having to delegate so much that I was losing focus of the actual classroom.
Right.
So what we do is we make our monthly schedules, and we put their names on the charts. We give them their hours, and we let them know what their responsibilities are a month in advance so they know. Johnny knows he comes in on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 3:30 to 6:30, and he's a level one leader. He's greeter number one. So he knows on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, he just comes with a happy face, opens up the door, and talks to all the parents. And he or she, they love that responsibility. Once they have clear directions of what they're supposed to do the minute they walk into that classroom, they will take it and run with it, children
right.
and adults alike. They really need to have a lot of a direction.
Sure.
And the more structure and organization that you have in your leadership team program, the bigger the heartbeat, the more intense your heartbeat is going to be in your school.
How many people do you normally, for a school of, let's say, 500, how many people would you have as team leaders that you'd shoot for to make the school run properly? What would
well,
be your
Luke, estimation? I'll run that through with you right now. Let's focus on the junior leadership team just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Usually your children's classes run from 3:30 to 6:30 each day, so that's 3 hours of assisting. Within those 3 hours, you need a greeter one, a greeter two who sits with the students. You need at least one buffer. You need one tracker. And I usually have one assistant and one junior leader. So you're talking about six leadership team members per day that you're actually using in the classroom.
Okay.
The minimum of six. Now, if you have 500 students, depending on how many staff members you have on deck would depend on how many additional leadership team members you have.
Right.
If you have a small staff, you would have maybe two or three more assistant instructors and maybe one additional junior leadership team member.
Okay. That's great.
I have a question.
Sure.
Hi, Melody. It's Charles.
Hi, Charles.
What is the ratio that you're using, one, per leadership team per number of students?
Well, you know, that's a fantastic question, but I don't use the ratio for my leadership team to the number of students. I use my staff to the number of students, and that's the difference because my leadership team, I used to rely heavily on my leadership team to help me maintain the organization of in my classroom. And now my focus on the leadership team is enhancing their leadership skills and enhancing their life just by having leadership responsibilities in the classroom. So you want to, I don't necessarily, if I have 30 kids in the class, I want to have more junior leadership team members. I actually want to have more staff members.
Okay.
Because the staff members are the ones who are creating the value, and the staff members are the ones who the people are actually paying for to be there. Again, the junior leadership team members, they're paying me to be a junior leadership team member, so I want to make sure that their responsibilities are very basic, but they're very, very specific so that they build their leadership skills. Again, just the transformation of focus on the junior leadership team, or I keep saying junior leadership team, but the transformation of focus on my leadership team has made a dramatic difference, and that's why I said, again, we're doing over $7,500 a month in cash, again, in cash, just on our leadership team program, which is an excellent way to increase your bottom line.
Another question. You make it sound like you don't have to do any type of advertising other than the patches on the leadership teams and the different uniforms. The parents just automatically ask about the leadership team, or is there some
We have an enrollment binder when the students actually come in and they do the enrollment process.
Mm-hmm.
And the leadership team is part of that enrollment binder where we talk about we have a leadership program that enhances their lifestyle through leadership training in the martial arts school. And we tell the parents, we give them leadership responsibilities within the martial arts school that will help them outside of the dojo, in classroom and at home. Immediately the parents listen to that and they think that is fantastic. I want to get my child on board as soon as I possibly can. So immediately the parents are thinking about it. They know it. They want to get a little more exposure into the school before they jump on the leadership team program. The minute they decide, because they're seeing a very structured, organized leadership team in action every single time they drop their child off to class. It just takes some time or another for the parents to actually say, okay, I think I want my child to go into the program. Of course, the child has to find one of my staff members to sponsor them before they can actually go into the program. But, yes, there's no advertising to it.
So the time between a student joining and the actual time of them coming into the leadership team, the parent can still, because I have trouble just getting them to read through the information packet. How do they know that it's still there? Is there something that's brought up constantly or reinforced within the body of a class that it's available, or something up on the wall that lets them know?
No, initially, yes. When we first started transforming our leadership team program, just like, of course, you know, Charles, we've transformed all of our programs.
Right.
We highlighted one specific program each month, whether it was our SWAT team, our demo team, our weapons team, or our leadership team. And each month we focused on the benefits to that actual program. And, of course, the focus on the benefit was always a complete 100% focus on the entire benefits, not just in the martial arts classroom, but outside the classroom as well. So the parents really like it because we're always relating what they're going to get out of the program and how it's going to help them, not just in the classroom, but how it's going to help them in school and how it's going to help them at home. And then we back it up by making sure that we are focusing on those points that we say that we can provide.
Are there any other perks that you use for the students themselves aside from the uniforms and the patches? You mentioned you have 2 half-hour training sessions per week.
Yes, they come to 2 half-hour training sessions per week, which is actually it's not two half-hour training sessions for each student. We have one for the juniors and one for the adults. So that's the benefit. And then, of course, the level 1, 2, 3 leaders. It's basically the leadership team sells itself now. So there's not actually we don't have to give them any other kind of perk except for the fact that the minute you join our leadership team, from the minute you stop, you're going to have skills that are going to last a lifetime.
I got a question for you. What is the rank? Like, do you allow white belts to be in the leadership team? What do you have? What's the requirement as far as rank?
You know, we've never put a minimal rank requirement, except for the fact that we want you to at least complete your beginner program. And of course, our programs are all goal based, so beginner would be right up to green belt. But we do have some students who we use the leadership team to help transform their attitude, because we have some parents who bring their children into our school and say, look, my child is very talented, he's athletic, and all this, but his problem is his self-esteem is very low and he has a very hard time taking orders from authority. Those are the kind of students where we're going to put them into our leadership team program to get that immediate exposure. That way we're not losing any value in their actual classroom. If they're in the classroom before they go into the leadership team program and they're one of those students who have behavioral problems, they're not going to get a lot out of it, as opposed to if they get exposure in the leadership team, they start to learn that following the rules is cool. They start to see how great it feels to be in a role of authority, so then they respect the role of authority. They're going to get a lot more of their regular training out of their regular training as well, if that makes sense. So you got to use your discretion, but as your leadership team grows, you're definitely going to be able to add more. You have to wait until your mid-level, you have to wait until your advanced level, which is a good way to increase your retention, too, because they have something to look forward to, like John mentioned earlier in this call.
Now, we at our school tried to, we recently started paying some of our black belts a small fee when they come in and help out with classes to get some more people on the floor for us. We tried to have a volunteer thing where we'd bring in anybody. We opened it to many belts, and we found that some of the younger kids and some of the lower belts were actually counterproductive. We were getting disruptive situations where kids were giggling, you know, they're holding mitts and they're giggling
right.
And laughing and coaxing the kids to fool around, and we were pulling our hair out of our head trying to figure out, you know, what are we doing wrong here? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, you know, that was the same situation that I was coming across too when we first introduced our leadership program, is because when you and I'm not trying to say that you're lacking any structure or organization, because of course I don't know exactly how your operations were going in the classroom. But when you don't have organization and structure, you really lose focus of the whole purpose of the program, which means that you're not able to really bring their mindset to where it needs to be. So I think the key to a successful leadership team program is, number one, have a fantastic structure to your program. And since you are an APS client, if you're not already a member of Human Concepts, send me an email and I will send you the leadership team report that I did this month that has how my leadership team program is organized. Once you have your organization, you eliminate a lot of that aloofness that sometimes instructors get, because if you don't have any structure or organization, you're always thinking of, okay, now what should I do next? And you lose focus of, this is my point and this is my goal in the classroom. And it's all about your attitude and how you present the leadership team to your students, too. And I'm very passion-driven when I'm teaching my students, and when I'm talking about being a leader, I'm talking about representing the best of the best, and it brings them up to a higher state of mind, which is very important.
How do we get, I take it your email is available on APS?
Yeah, actually, let me address that. This is Jeff. You can actually, we certainly encourage all of our clients to, and we'll be doing much more with Melody and Human Concepts in the very near future, certainly encourage all of our APS clients to join her service. She's got some great stuff on there. Schumannconcepts.com, and you can actually go there and get all the information you need, or contact the APS sales department as well, and we'll have some information for you with regard to that. Let me just say that we're a little bit over on our call today, so I'd certainly, unless there's any final questions for Allie, John, or Melody, I'd certainly like to wrap some things up. I'd like to mention, before I do, and we can certainly have an extra question or two here, but I'd like to remind everyone to send any recommendations or requests for future topics, along with comments and reviews on this call, to APS at consulting@apsfinancial.com. Because we'd like to use that information to help select future topics and speakers, as well as to promote this new service to other APS clients. So certainly your comments and reviews would be really much appreciated.
I'm sorry, I've got a real quick question for John.
Sure, yeah, please, please.
Mike at Wong's. I'd love to actually get together with him privately, and I was wondering, John, do you do consulting with APS? Like if I call the APS consulting line,
yes.
Can I get you?
Yep, you get that included in your APS membership, so definitely.
And we also have some intensive, one-on-one consulting that we do offer for a nominal fee. It really is nominal when you compare what else is out there that's customized to your goals and needs, and John can talk to you about that as well.
Sure.
John, I'll put a call into you.
Okay, or if you, yeah, the other call, just give me an email with either one.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. All right, everyone. Well, if that's it for today, I'd like to thank everyone for being a part of the call. I think we got some great information from our three speakers and really top-notch stuff. And this is just part of really our renewed commitment at APS to help each and every one of you be all that you can be, so they say. I think that's a slogan already. I don't think we can use that one.
Jeff, can I add in there, too? That
of course. Please, John.
That,
yes.
You know, with Melanie Alley and myself and I believe Tommy Lee, you've got the boot camp coming up in Philadelphia. At the APS office, so everybody should really check that out. And I think, what is it, March 20th on a Saturday?
It's March 20th, and actually it's only $99 and $49 for each additional, but anyone who books by the 15th, and we've already starting to fill up quickly, anyone who books by the 15th actually is 2-for-1. So it's $99 and you bring two people.
Great.
So you just can't beat it, and John's exactly right with Melody and John and Tommy and Allie. You know, the quality of speaking is just second to none. It's all day Saturday. It'll be a 12:30 session to 8 o'clock at night. We also will be doing, and we'll get some more information to everyone who signs up. We'll be doing an initial preliminary training with Allie, most likely in the morning, for everyone who buys his tapes. So you can get those tapes through us. There's Taking to the Next Level and a drill tape as well. They're excellent, and I highly recommend them. And really, I mean, it's something every school should have. So everyone who purchases those tapes through APS will also be eligible to come to special training in the morning to implement that. If we have our age-specific leadership program available, it'll be available by then, but if we have it done sooner, then we'll probably do a training in the morning as well with Melody specifically for people who have purchased that as well.
And Jeff's buying dinner, too.
Right. Dinner, of course. Absolutely. We'll bring in some tacos.
I like tacos.
All right, I'm sure you do.
Melody.
Excellent.
And John, it's great talking to you guys. I got to run off to my schools and have a great day. And Jeff, thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Allie.
I'll talk to you soon. All right.
Thank you. Everybody.
Take care, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.